This is Alan with the Toon Army in Baltimore. A gooner and a toffee walk into a bar. Decided to do a shit football podcast. You're listening to the DU Football Show.
And you stole that from me.
Podcast!
Oh my God. Yep, we are.
Tell everybody what you do with an autogram. Podcast!
There's a club with a shit ton of money that apparently isn't allowed to spend it because who knows what the fuck the rules are anymore. We're going to talk about it. Let's start the show.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston.
Sam Houston.
Arsenal fans have another Sam. Great day, yay, the fucking Gooner Graham. Smells of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Grammy.
Sam Graham.
Fucking United!
Hello and welcome to the DU Football Show, a completely biased opinion?
Bean about, counting session.
About FFP and PSR. It's told by two common American schmucks. I am your host, Sam Houston, and across the way, being inconvenienced by road traffic and people's opinions of Mexicans, apparently, and their alcohol, my co-host, Mr. Samuel Graham.
Very differing opinions, might I say. He's very into the alcohol, very seemed to be against the Mexicans.
Well, you are,
very strange today.
Work in Carroll County, and there are some not so good opinions of things up there.
What a weird day.
Very, very weird
strange
day.
But like I said, breaking down walls and building bridges one bottle of tequila at a time.
Heard. And of course, on the ones and twos, producer Mel, how are you doing today?
I'm always inconvenienced by the two of you.
I thought you were going to say Mexicans. I thought you were going to lean into the bit and just say it. That's a joke, YouTube. Joke.
We're recording at the DU Public House just outside the nation's capital. You can check us out wherever you get your podcast. And, of course, streaming live every single Monday night. Should you want to chat with us, there's many ways that you can. Mr. Graham, tell the good people how they can get in touch.
If you want to contribute some jokes, it's at DU Football Show at all the social medias and DUFootballShow@gmail.com to get in touch via email. And unless you're overly sensitive, please sign up to Drunkards United FC, where you can catch the closed group where all the hashtag bans happen.
I loved
on Facebook, of course.
I loved that Taylor reached out to us personally and just reminded us, you know, he was like, yeah, you know, this guy, you know, saw his way out while I get told that I live underneath Houston's taint, you know, and I jerk off to the show, and I'm apparently the governor of Grindr. Thanks. Pretty much. Now,
I mean, that's the thing. When you know what, if you want to be the whipper instead of the whippy,
right?
Buy some microphones and a computer. Start your own fucking show.
Right. Precisely. That's how this works.
Here is what I know. Apparently, when friends of mine come and join, there's only two paths for them. The darkness on their way out, or the lightness like Mr. Twombly.
Yes, exactly. real quick, kids, I just want to say, it's really warm in here, and I just want to let you all know, never doubt my fucking ability to get something I goddamn want.
Uh-oh. Is it a permanently corrupt t-shirt? Ah, Malort shirt. I like it.
What? I didn't know about this.
Yes, that is right, ladies and gentlemen.
Nice.
What?
I have the mighty Lakeview FC of the Chicago Soccer League's fucking jersey from Olive and York with Jepson's Malort on the front.
Nice.
What a... Wow. Wait, when did this...
This got put up on the internet in the closed group. I saw it. I immediately bought it. I just had to wait for them to print it and ship it. This was months ago.
Nice.
Wow.
It would be good if I put the mic back in front of my mouth as opposed to off out of the way. And yeah, there
that's
we go.
That's tight. I like that.
Yeah,
we should charge $5 just for that striptease.
Yeah, there we are. I just, I never doubt my ability to get something that I want.
Yeah.
If I want it, I will have it.
Be careful. You have somewhat of a checkered past.
Hey. None of that alpha dom shit, okay? If you watch TikTok, you already know about that fucking lunatic.
Well, if you guys are Also, Netflix subscribers should be able to see Sam featured in the new Nickelodeon documentary.
None of that now, thank you.
Shorebilly wonders if that's a counterfeit. He doesn't think they make it in that size.
Why, yes, they do offer them in 5XL. I always, in fact, I bitch and moan to my
all the time.
My local, the United States Toffees, the North American Toffees. Yes. They set up all this stuff for us to have logoed apparel for, like, with Hummel, in conjunction with Hummel, for like Baltimore Toffees, DC Toffees, all that kind of stuff. And none of it goes above 2XL.
Yeah, it's fucked.
And when they were talking about doing it, I very specifically went to people like Tony Sampson, who fucking runs the North American Toffees, and said, get large sizes. Not 2XL is not a large size. I wore a 2XL when I was in my 20s.
Well, in certain cuts, I'm wearing 2XLs now.
Right. Exactly.
In certain cuts of shirts.
Yes, ma'am.
Taylor wants you to know that it was Brody that had posted it originally in the group.
See?
He is also wondering how he is possibly able to give Brody any amount of credit.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Our boy, this will upset Graham. Our boy, Mr. Brad Parker, Crystal Palace supporter. he has done a bunch of designs for Olive and York as well.
Okay, great.
Yeah, yeah. So done some fun shit for them.
Nice. So Olive and York is the brand of shirt, and Lakeview FC is the team.
Yes,
correct.
Lakeview is the team. Olive and York is the brand of shirt.
I don't want him to not work. Yeah. I just want him to work over there.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay. off in Narnia, right?
Yeah, I'm not. That's fine.
Yeah. All right, good. Sam, myself, both work in the wine and spirit industry and both have a deep passion and love for all things distilled spirit. So as the red-blooded Americans we are, we vow to have a drink in our hand throughout this show and every single show. Mr. Graham, we are finally to the top five. And this is one of those bottles, despite price point, and we'll get into it a little bit. This is one of those kind of harder to get bottles that I'm okay with seeing on the list almost every year.
Because they release enough of it that a lot of stores get it.
You can find
you
this
should
bottle.
Be able to find it.
And we'll get into price in a second, but let's do the description first, of course.
Yeah, so this is Whiskey Advocate's top 20 of 2023's number five, kicking off your top five with Wild Turkey Master's Keep Voyage. This clocks in at 106 proof and runs around $275. I don't think I've seen it for less than $300 on the shelf because it is rare. Most people take that extra $25 minimum. Some people go more than that, of course. The panel rated it a 95, and your blurb comes from Johnny McCormick. Master Distiller Eddie Russell's latest iteration in the Master's Keep collection is a 10-year-old bourbon matured in number four char barrels and then finished in Jamaican rum casks selected by Appleton Estates master blender Joy Spence. The whole series has been triumphant, but this rum cask finished gem shows Russell in tremendous form, serving up a joyous chestnut brown bourbon that delivers the best from both the whiskey and the rum influence. The promise of baking spice aromas, toffee, red berries, and black tea leads into an irresistible combination of cola flavors, vanilla brown sugar, chocolate cherry truffles, and ginger.
All right. So, key thing, less than 2 years ago, this was a $150 bottle. And the fact that it's taken that big of a jump is insane. But also across the board, with whiskey, everything's taken a massive jump.
With any alcohol, really. I mean, everything's taken price increases. There was aluminum shortages. There was all sorts of stuff that was going on that was making prices very, very expensive.
Everybody should check out, this is not either side of the fence, but everybody should go see what the FTC had to say about grocery stores and their increase of prices.
The Federal Trade Commission?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Ultimately, what the FTC report had, we won't get too much into it, is that, yes, prices went up because of supply chain. They have stayed up because the grocery stores are making massive fucking profits.
Nice.
And they're not. They didn't decrease it. Methinks that's a lot of what the liquor world has done, too.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Is
how trying, often do you see prices come down?
Yeah. Everybody trying to see if they could get away with it.
Yeah.
And the problem is that it got done on such massive scale in every walk of life that actually I think we will see the prices come back down because
Well, didn't they rescind a lot of Trump's tariffs?
Yeah, everybody done been caught.
You know,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. None of my scotch came back down.
Right. Hey, I think we'll see it because everybody's going to start, you know, not selling as much and go, oh, shit, maybe we need to
decrease the price.
Yeah, so.
Fuckers.
Anywho, back to this. So, yes, Mel?
I'm putting in the chats that the system crashed because obviously the EFL is trying to silence the truth.
The FA.
Thank you.
Yeah, the FA is trying to silence
the truth. Just to make sure I'm correct in who I'm blaming the conspiracy on.
Well, they want to silence the truth, too, because they're getting plenty of fucking money from the top, okay?
They are true. Very true. So, anyways, back to the whiskey itself. I don't mind seeing the Turkey Master's Keep on the list regularly because it is findable. It's not impossible to find. You could go out right now and find this bottle. It is a shame that this used to be $150 and it's now $275 to $300.
Right. You can't walk in a store, any store, and find it. Yeah, you might have to do some searching, but right. A store within, I don't know, 25 miles of you should have it.
A decent whiskey selection and a good relationship with the Campari company, which is who represents Wild Turkey, you can probably find that bottle.
Right.
It's not impossible.
Yeah.
It's harder now that because it came
out
in December.
For a while.
So it's harder now. I thought that the Bardstown Foursquare was exceptional.
Yeah.
No, it ain't. This is bloody fucking this is an amazing fucking
whiskey. It's a very good whiskey. I'm excited to see what the water does to it. At first initial thoughts, that baking spice is big in your face, and that cherry cola finish is big. The other stuff was kind of fleeting. I didn't really get much out of it, but those two flavors in general were just right in your face the entire time. I'm anxious to see how this water changes it and opens it up a little bit.
Nose, I totally get Jamaican rum. Big, ripe banana, over-estrification, you know, that kind of funkiness that a Jamaican rum has that other rums don't. It is sweet. It is beautiful. It doesn't lose sight of the fact that it is still a whiskey because you think of something like, say, you know, the rum finish from Angel's Envy that tends to taste more like fruitcake and less like whiskey. This is fucking... It's amazing. It's an amazing fucking whiskey.
It's a very good whiskey. Very happy with it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not happy with the price, but, you know...
No.
It's also just knowing that, like, again, like I said, literally less than 2 years ago, it was $150.
Yeah.
You know, so it's an annoyance and it's a shame that that's kind of where the whiskey industry is going. You know what? Keep doing that and people will move on to tequila
or rum.
They'll move on to something else and you won't be the belle of the ball anymore. Like, And then you lose people, and sure, you'll still have collectors around, but will they be willing to pay as much?
Well, the biggest annoyance for me is especially bourbons. I know the barrels cost a lot of money, and I know that barrels, you have to be new to have a bourbon. It has to be a first fill barrel. But corn is in such abundance. Mm-hmm. Your raw product is one of the most easily accessible grains that exists.
Yeah.
It's like part of the reason rum is still cheap, despite their Angel share being about 12% a year, right? Because, I mean, they use sugar cane.
Right.
And it grows like weeds.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of in sugar cane, Sam?
Yeah.
Fermentable sugar.
Yeah, exactly.
So you just make the fuck out of rum all the time. easy.
Easiest fucking thing in the world to make. Yes.
Producer Mel. We do have a question in the chat. Scott wants to know, what's the best whiskey under 75?
Well, I mean, obviously that's a subjective question. Everybody's going to have their own tastes. But Sam, for you, so you look like you already have one.
No. Well, were you going to say subjective taste and also just saying the word whiskey, right? So are we talking, you know, an American whiskey?
Yeah.
Are we talking?
That's a fair point.
Bourbon, rye, Scotch, Canadian, Irish. You know, all of those have different categories. Under 70 is a big number because let's face it, most of the time, you can find a decent bourbon under 40. You know, you think of things just run of the mill stuff like Woodford
Redemption.
Yeah, Woodford Redemption. Yeah, these are very easy to find and they're not terribly expensive. Really love Bibb and Tucker being under, yep, under 70.
I like the double char was, yeah, excellent as well.
That's under 70 is great. Wyoming whiskey, their bourbon is
very good.
Fucking delightful for
a lot
under
of,
70.
A lot of the Ragged Branch stuff was decent.
Mm-hmm, and that's all under 70. Hell, that's most of that's under 50.
Oh, yeah.
The Ragged Branch stuff is fantastic.
A lot of Four Roses stuff now.
Mm-hmm, very
so a lot
affordable.
Of their single barrel stuff is still pretty affordable. As, yeah, long as you find a decent retailer. I mean, a lot of people are marking stuff up, of course. But
single malts, you're not going to find much under 70. I would still say probably Deanston's Virgin Oak is delightful and cost you under 50,
yeah,
for a single malt. That is really, really good.
Yeah, Glenfiddich should still run you about 70.
For the 12-year-old?
For the 12-year. Yeah. And their 12-year sherry should be just over, probably closer to 75.
Mm-hmm.
But that's worth the price. So we had that on this list.
Yep.
Totally worth the price of admission.
Yeah. And then, like, for blended, Firehawk bought a bottle the other day, and this is under 40, is the Dura's 12-year-old. Again, I will die on that hill. The best blended whiskey at a good price point.
Yeah.
It's just, it's phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
What are you giggling about?
No, it just kind of hit me at a few seconds after you said it.
Mm-hmm.
It's Firehawk.
Uh-huh.
But you said Firehawk like he's, oh, some, okay, sort of superhero, which is, it just made me giggle. Okay. I wasn't even going to call you out on it, but I laughed audibly after it kind of settled.
Rye Whistlepig's Piggyback is great at that price point. You,
yeah,
know,
that'll be right around $50, $53, yeah, right in that sort of range. And that's both of those. The rye is better than the bourbon, in my opinion.
Yes, very much so. Yes, agreed.
Yeah. So there's that. Yeah. There's a lot, man. And it also depends what you're trying to do with it, right? Like, mm-hmm, that Traveler. If you're looking for a highball, would I sip it on a regular basis? Probably not. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Throw some soda water and a twist on it. Hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. For $40 on the shelf?
Yeah.
Or even some ginger ale.
Mm.
Like,
some of the things.
Tullamore Dew.
Yeah.
At $25.
For
bucks.
Irish? Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
One of the most accessible and easy bottles of whiskey to find is very, mm-hmm, good. Tullamore Dew 12-year. Mm-hmm. Would be under $70 on the shelf.
You can't really find it anymore, but like the Glendalough, the 18-year-old Mizanora Oak.
Oh, yeah.
That's a fucking $75 bottle,
uh-huh,
for an 18-year-old single malt.
Yep.
Like, yeah, there's some really,
there's
great
a
gems
lot
out
of
there.
Good stuff. But again, you know, whiskey, yes, is a category. Aged spirit distilled at 160 or less.
Yeah.
But there's so many nuances between types of whiskey, and you have to be more specific with that if you want us to dial in a little bit more.
Well, he says, pick one.
You pick one.
Well, no. Scotty, seriously,
Woodford,
do you...
Woodford Dunn.
I mean, if you're just looking to start with some bourbons, I would say Woodford is a great go-to.
Yeah, I'd say, yeah, Woodford and Woodford Double Oak and Redemption.
Yeah,
would be all... they're all going to be Redemption's would be under 30.
Yeah,
Woodford's, it's a great everyday.
Woodford's gonna be probably 35.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a great everyday after work. You can sip it, you can mix it, you can do what you want with it, and you're not breaking the bank. Woodford, you know, is more Thursday through Sunday. Woodford Double Oak is definitely a Friday or Saturday occasion.
Or, Scott, get your spouse to drive to an Annapolis Blues game and see me in the parking lot. I might or might not have a bag full of fucking whiskey every time I'm there.
And depending how this week goes with numbers, just hit me up on Thursday afternoon.
But yeah, it's but keep asking those questions. We do appreciate it, and there's a lot of ways you can go. And you know, tell us what you try. Please tell us what you try.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
share all that stuff,
there,
man.
So yeah.
So Taylor says Graham turned me on to Fistful of Bourbon for a cheap good bourbon, and Christian says I'm staggered. He didn't say Buffalo Trace. Doesn't Graham sell that?
No.
But it's also hard to it's not easy to come by. I mean,
it's not easy to come by.
It's a perfectly good bourbon. It's a very good bourbon,
it's
but
a little sweet for my taste.
It's not it's hard to come by. It's just, you know, and also stores over market because
for
they know they can.
Right. And for what you're getting for the price that you're going to be paying retail, you all would be sick to your stomach if I told you how much wholesale actually was.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna.
Yep, precisely.
because that just undermines my entire job.
All right, so Mr. Graham, what else should we always do?
Always remember to drink responsibly.
Absolutely.
When you're going on your voyage. See what I did there?
You're on.
Oh my God, I got a boner. Oh yes.
Oh, don't go for a third time. You know you all fuck it up if you try to go for a third
smash.
Time.
Smash. The whole thing will be dead.
All right, so we've seen a lot from this season from the Premier League concerning profitability and sustainability, points deductions that have been handed out to multiple clubs. Spending in the transfer market has come to a complete standstill. It's certainly done something to football, but what I wonder is it really fucking working, Graham? Got you right in the middle of fucking inhaling.
No, it's not working. It doesn't. Well, in terms of getting people to stop overspending, yeah, it's working. I mean, we saw a decrease in over £250 million being spent this winter.
Right.
And that obviously followed by just a few weeks prior to the transfer window opening, you got docked your initial 10 points.
Yeah. Scared the fuck everybody out of everybody.
Oh, shit.
Right.
They have teeth. The caveat to all this, though, is we should say that these rules came into effect by the 20 Premier League clubs at the time voting on them and voting these rules in and coming up with these rules because they didn't want the government involved.
Right.
They didn't want an independent regulator appointed by the UK government to oversee them. So the government said you have to do something. So they voted these rules in. So in essence, they did it to themselves.
Yes. Why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about exactly what the PSR is?
All right. So what I have here came via Sky Sports article from about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
This section here is what counts towards PSR and what doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So Premier League clubs have expensive tastes, obviously. Let's start off with transfer fees. The top flight spender was $2.4 billion with a B, in the 2023 summer window and an average of $120 million per club, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That in and of itself would potentially blow the three-year balance sheet apart in one go, but those sums don't go into the accounts all at once. Using a process called amortization, clubs are able to treat players as assets in a financial sense, much like you do your house.
Right.
rather than being one big outgoing, even if they do pay the whole cost up front. If you sign a $50 million player on a five-year contract, they are worth $50 million at the start and zero at the end, so they depreciate in your account, essentially. Mm-hmm. In accounting terms, that can be put down as a $10 million loss every year. That's exactly why we have seen Chelsea and other clubs signing players on contracts as long as 8 years and why the Premier League clubs voted this December to limit spending those transfer fees over a maximum of 5 years from now on. Now, obviously, you can't go back and punish them because the law didn't exist.
Right.
But they saw this loophole and went, fuck, shut it down.
Right.
And they voted that rule change in December.
Mm-hmm.
So from January 1 on, you can no longer amateurize those losses over a period longer than 5 years. Beyond the creative accounting, there's a number of other expenses which do not count towards PSR. These are not set in stone, but are generally accepted as being costs which are incurred in the general interests of football, such as the club's infrastructure, any associated women's team, and the cost of running their academy. There was also some added leeway granted for the unforeseen income drop caused by COVID-19 losses across the 2019-2020 and 2020-2021 season were averaged, and clubs were allowed to exclude any drop in income which could directly be attributed to COVID, though this will drop out of the three-year accounting period for this current season. So now we're 3 years beyond the end of that once this season's books are finished. So basically, anything that you spend on the club infrastructure wise, so should be stadium, should be, you know, upgrades to whatever in that sort of sense. And mainly it's stadium, really, and I guess back office potentially.
Right.
It could count as infrastructure, I would assume. I'd say anything directly related to football, probably managers do count, but you know, the ticket lady doesn't. Or the tea lady doesn't.
Right.
You're allowed to incur $5 million in losses of its own, the club's own money per year.
Right.
Basically, right? You are also allowed to absorb $35 million of a cash injection from your owner per year.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means you can lay out another $35 million.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm sorry. I think it's a total of $35 million. So another 30 from your owner.
Another 30, yeah.
Which allows you over a 3-year span to lose as much as 105 million pounds.
Right.
Over a 3-year span. So, which is, it does limit what the big clubs can do. The problem is where it quote unquote benefits the big clubs, because they can't just go out and spend $150 million on a player unless they've got the money coming in to do so. What it does do is it still limits further, because everything's relative, right? Mm. The income of Burnley is not the income of Manchester City.
Right.
So it limits what Burnley can do, because their owner can only inject the exact same amount of money Sheikh Mansour can.
Right.
Right? So they can't really grow. But that being said, hire a better marketing team then, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, there's other ways, I guess, around that,
mm-hmm.
you know? I'm not saying that's a fix. I'm just saying that,
right.
But it does limit what the big clubs can do. We saw that in January. Tottenham mm-hmm. Tottenham spent the most money in January of the big six.
Right.
Tottenham spent the most money of the big six on that terrible center back with the better man bun than me, which annoys me, actually.
Yeah. So,
Dragishin, I think his name
so
was.
So where we sit currently is Everton, obviously, were docked 10 points in December after appeal reduced to six for being 19.5 million over the allowed 105 million loss over 3 years. To date, this is the harshest penalty when it was the 10 points given to a club in the top flight in the history mm-hmm. of the league. And there was no actual laid out structure for why. And then mm-hmm. when they did it, they said, by the way, it's on a case-to-case basis, to essentially say, we can fine whoever, whatever amount of points we want to, which then does make you wonder, is there any advantage to, say, a bigger club because you fear the loss of revenue money as far as TV deals go if you were to, say, punish a Chelsea or punish a City worse? You wonder about that. And then you come to Forest has now recently found themselves guilty and docked 4 points while being 34.5 million over the 61 million they were allowed to be over. The reason why it was 61 million, they spent 2 years in the championship.
Right, which those losses are less.
Right. But their money was almost double what Everton's was, and they were only docked 4 points. So then you go, all right, if we're comparative with violations of dollars, why does one get an initial 10 and the other one gets an initial 4 when the one who got the initial 4, despite having a lower threshold, was way over? Now, a Forest supporter would tell you the following. The reason why they were exactly that number off, they weren't expecting to come up. And when they did, the number one asset they had that they were going to sell if they were still in the championship was Brennan Johnson. They sold him to Tottenham for how much, Graham?
62 million, I think, right. Or something like that, roughly.
No, 60 million. 60 million, but I believe the initial was 40.
Okay,
right?
60 million after add-ons.
There was a deal done with Everton for 30 million before
the deadline.
Before they came up, and then they came up, and the deal went off the table because they had to fucking keep him.
Well, the other thing, and Forrest is so there's so much to unpack.
Oh my! Again, sorry guys, we are going to bounce all over the fucking place, but that's kind of what this story is. It's everywhere.
And the Premier League, and the clubs and these rules did it to themselves, because there's no actual schedule of punishment,
mm-hmm.
right? Case by case. One leads you open to conspiracy theories,
mm-hmm.
which if you're on the shit end of the conspiracy theory, you obviously believe the conspiracy theory. See Republicans. JK, JK. For real though, sometimes.
By the way, Graham registered Republican. Everybody,
I am.
He's making fun of his own people.
But I'm a smart one. But then you also have these two situations, right? So Forrest, we're in a weird spot because I want to say it was somewhere around 60-70% of their playing staff was on fucking loan. So they were going to go into the season with like 13 registered first team players that they actually owned.
Yes, you're absolutely right. The bulk of their team was loans.
So they had to bring people in. Did they need to bring in 21? No, they didn't. That's true. But they were going to have to overspend their means to just have a playing staff. Yeah. If they brought themselves up to a normal 26-man squad, they were going to have to more than double the playing staff,
right,
or very close to that.
Mm-hmm.
So they were always going to have to spend more money. And whether that be in a loan fee or a purchase, now because they were newly promoted, some people held them to the sword. And they had to overpay for a few players, mm-hmm, Jesse Lingard being one of them,
yeah,
you know, kind of thing. Now, City, for instance, didn't need to buy all these players, bought them anyway. A lot of financial dealings, paid over the odds just to get them because City were new money. They didn't have a real history.
Right.
You know, I mean, we joke around all the time. Tyrell sent all these, you know, the guy interviewing potential fans for clubs, and the first one was City was there Manchester City before 2005? And the guy was like, no, when they were founded.
Right, exactly.
Which is funny and true. And but so they're doing all this. It was part of the reason these rules came into place in the first place, conveniently after Manchester City had assembled one of the greatest teams in history.
Right, and also remember, in the 90s, this same thing happened with Chelsea. Chelsea was not in a good way in the 70s and 80s. They were not a big club. In the 90s, when bought by, mm-hmm, Abramovich, they shot through the fucking roof because he spent a shit ton of money.
Exactly. So you look at Forrest, and they had that weird situation about needing to double the playing staff. Then you look at Everton, and they had... It was essentially the summer of the 10 is what caught up with them.
Mm-hmm.
Because as I read in here what counts towards PSR and what doesn't, you were still making payments on some of those players.
On old salaries.
Old salaries for players that weren't even with the club anymore.
Yeah. So Sigurdsson would be
so
one
you're incurring losses, yeah, of potentially 2-3 years worth of losses at once.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if... Like the example, if you paid $50 million for a player over 5 years, you'd be a $10 million depreciation over the length of that deal,
mm-hmm,
right? That would not, until you re-signed him, would not accrue value again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Gylfi obviously had his issue, got contract terminated.
Also hurt Everton because Everton, right, then wasn't able to sell him.
But correct. So you incurred his entire, the remaining portion of his payment deal all at once. So instead of losing the example 10 million, say you lost 25, because,
yeah,
you still had two and a half more payments, yeah, left. So all of that happens at once. So the summer of the 10, and then the stadium, which shouldn't count, but apparently when we discussed with Ryan,
mm-hmm,
a few, what was it, 2 months ago, a month and a half ago, whatever it was, when we discussed with Ryan, and he was a bit more in the know about it, the manner in which Mushiri financed the stadium with self-financed, mm-hmm, or whatever.
Uncle Usmanov, give credit where credit's due.
Right, but that put those losses squarely on the club,
yeah,
because Usmanov's money was the club's money.
Right.
And then the financing fell through because the Russians decided to invade Ukraine.
Exactly.
And Usmanov was one of the oligarchs.
Yep.
So then you look at Manchester City. Right. So all of that shit hit Everton at one time. And, mm-hmm, that's sucks.
Right.
That's tough.
Because if you look at actual sporting advantage, Everton's one of the lowest spending clubs for the last 5 seasons.
Right.
Since that big giant spend of the 10, and then when Carlo was there and they got Decore and Alan and James and stuff like that. But other than that, they have spent very, very little money, and,
right,
they have shipped out a good amount of money. The problem is the stadium. Is really what it is. It's killing
And
him.
Because he went self-financed instead of a proper, you know, 30-year fix,
right,
like,
exactly,
your granddad had, you know, that loss becomes because the financier especially is now, his assets are frozen,
right,
that loss becomes the club's money,
yep,
not the bank's money.
Exactly.
So that's a problem. Anyway, so that happened. But then you look at City, and City is another unique case like Forest. So Forest have a little bit of an argument because they were, quote unquote, spending responsibly by bringing people on loan and not buying them prior to them being in the Premier League.
Mm-hmm.
But then, oh, shit, we need to do this. And they were kind of hedging their bets against the future TV earnings,
mm-hmm,
right? And they did stay up, but I'm not exactly sure where. I think he just got addicted to buying players. I also think the independent commission is worried about the owner because he's a bit of a psychopath.
Also didn't help that they didn't get a shirt sponsor until
halfway through the season, that first season, yeah, or whatever. Precisely. Yeah, or three quarters of the way through the first season.
It was into this season. I think it was finally midway through the first half of this season.
Right.
He finally got a shirt sponsor.
Right, which is just revenue left on the table. Stupid.
Right.
You're not Barcelona, man.
That's typically 30 mil a year. You,
yeah,
get, like that.
Right.
Which
would have eaten up
your loss.
Whole thing. Yeah.
There's your owner loss right there. Like paid.
But City, because of when these rules began and their implementation, like actual like enforceability became a thing, they're looking at like a 9, 10 year or 12 year, mm-hmm, whatever it is, span of time of multiple deals structured through multiple clubs that they own.
Mm-hmm.
Possible, you know, with the Etihad Airways sponsorship, which I think part of this is also the owner of the club can't own the sponsor.
Lying about what the sponsor payouts really were versus
like
what they said they were on the
so
books.
So there's so much more to this than what's registered with the Premier League. And they've got, I'm sure, a team of forensic accountants, and City will have their day in court, but I'm sure that at least some of these, I mean, let's be honest. With the squad they assembled and the sporting advantage they gained, there's absolutely no way they're going to be relegated.
Right.
I could see them being docked a record number of points.
Mm-hmm.
But it won't matter, and the worst will finish as fourth.
Right.
Yeah. Because UEFA don't want them to miss out on the Champions League either.
Well,
but they could be docked. I don't have the league table in front of me. Mel, do you happen to have it pulled up there or no? On your computer?
No, Sam, while you're looking that up, let me go ahead and go through what the timeline this season, because the reason why all of this is happening during the middle of the season is there was an outcry because of Everton last year to have this done in a more expedient manner, because clubs that went down, which we'll talk about.
Yes, I'm looking at the league standings, okay, now, and Aston Villa is still ahead of Tottenham.
So hopefully your friend's not watching. So City currently sit in third place on 63 points. Villa earned fourth on 56. So if they got docked, say, 15 points, right?
Mm-hmm.
That would take them down to 48. They would still be in a Europa League spot above Manchester United.
Wow. Wow.
Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed at that. At least not on mic.
But what I'm saying is mm-hmm, they could technically and literally kind of throw the book at City,
right,
by doubling, more than doubling the end result of what your punishment was.
Okay. So I want to get
do you back, see what I'm saying?
I want to get back to what I was saying, but I do want to finish this because you're on this thought. The problem there is you give them 15 points, you then go, okay, 115 violations get you 15 points. One violation
got you 10. No,
got
I know.
You fucking 10. Now, does that then open up the door? Because there's been a lot of talk of where Everton stayed up last year that the teams that went down were going to sue Everton, well, right?
Except one of them is in violation too.
And that's what we're going to get to. fucking irony. I fucking love that shit.
That's like calling the police on your drug dealer for stealing your money.
The amount of tweets from fucking Ryan kept receipts. It was putting up all the shit of Leicester fans talking shit. It was brilliant. But anyways, that so you wonder, does that open the door for legality issues? And as a league, do you want clubs within your own league suing each other?
No,
right.
Obviously not.
So that could open up a whole nother can of worms. Now, reason why we're here, like I said, teams last year were like, look, this needs to be expedited. This needs to be handled during the season that it's happened, right? If you violated it during the season, that sporting advantage, it could be what keeps you up and fuck the next year, right?
Right.
So because of that, they wrote these following rules. On January the 15th, clubs would be charged for violations. There were four clubs found in violation. Only two were charged. The four that were found in violation was Villa, Wolves, Everton, and Forest. Villa and Wolves were not charged because theirs was linked towards youth academy and women's program, right? I would say, why is that any different than fucking building a stadium? Like, it benefits your club as a whole, especially youth players. Those eventually become players you can sell as valued assets with no bump on what you sell them for. Remember, selling a homegrown player, you don't get any deduction on the amount correct. Of dollar you sell.
But that's like a tax benefit for building your warehouse somewhere. I mean, that's what they chose to do to continue, right? Because what stops MLB teams from going to the Dominican Republic and getting a Dominican player for 35% to 40% less than they would have to buy a kid from Iowa? Mm-hmm. It's the same thing.
Right.
So if you invest, because they're trying to, that's a national team thing, inevitably. Mm-hmm. They're trying to say, we still want you to operate your youth academy and put money into it because we need English players to to fill those academies.
But you're able to sell those English players at a profit.
Correct. Eventually, yes.
Because you're even able to sell them.
But that's well outside your three-year period. That's a moot point.
Because even if they're not successful, you can still sell them for a profit to the championship even and get
Not at 14 million. Years old, I can't.
Yeah, but when
I bought the kid at 11 and I had to upgrade the youth facility for that at 11. That's a moot point. I don't agree with that at all.
That's fine.
And the women, they don't want them to can the women's team.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, what they need to do, and this is a forensic accountant's job, is to make sure they're not funneling and doctoring books to make it look like the women lost more money than they did, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where, we didn't spend that on the men's team, but the women got, you know, 20 times the five-star catering on a non-game day.
Right, precisely.
For some reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's...
Now, back to the timeline. Everton and Forrest were charged. On April the 5th, all hearings are to be completed. Forrest is done. They have been docked 4 points. Everton started today. It is today, tomorrow, and Wednesday, and we are supposed to have a notice by the following week.
This is charged two. That covers most of the same period of time. Yep. Okay.
Now.
Which I think is, that's fucking absurd also.
Yes. By April the 12th, all sanctions have to be handed down. Clubs have 7 days to appeal. As we said, Forrest got 7 points. Who knows what Everton's going to get? I mean, got 4 points. Who knows what Everton's going to get? I'm starting to believe how you are. I'm beginning to believe it's going to be like 4 or 6 points. And then ultimately, if it's 6 points, it gets reduced to four. So they still get the 10 that they always wanted to give them in the first place. And on May the 19th, the season is over, right? On May the 24th, all appeals are finished and then results are handed down.
I mean, maybe they could take 10 to 12 days.
Oh, wait, no, Leicester just got charged on March the 20th instead of January the 15th. And they aren't even in the fucking Premier League!
Yeah.
Hold on. The rules they wrote was January the 5th fucking 10th. And last week a team just got charged.
So apparently
while they're in the middle of trying to fucking win the championship and get promotion.
Oh, but they're not, they got knocked off the top. Here's the other, like, so this is my problem. If you're going to come up with an independent commission or military tribunal or whatever the fuck you're doing to police this, yeah? They have to make a decision on when to do the cutoff.
Right.
Right? All of this bollocks in the same season is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
If you gained a sporting advantage, fine, great. You know what? Good for you. But we're handling it in the offseason.
Yeah.
You will start, if you stayed up, then you're going to start the next season with a 15, 20, 30 point deduction, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
But you're going to start, that you're going to know what league you're in the day the season's over. And you're going to start the new season in the league you were meant to be in based on the results of the final day of last season.
Yep.
And then we will do everything in our power to make it difficult for you so you remember to follow the fucking rules for the following season.
Right.
And I'm sorry for the clubs that go down, but you're not allowed to sue about it because they are being punished.
win more fucking
games. You're getting your parachute payments.
But you're also getting the opportunity to win on the field, right? So mm-hmm. in the case of like Luton right now, win fucking games.
Mm-hmm.
Win fucking games. Right. It's that simple.
But docking points, giving points back, doing all this in the same, within the confines of one calendar season, August to May, I think completely undermines the sporting integrity of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Because that affects players psychologically, that affects players emotionally, that affects players' preparation. We all like to think that everybody's an uber 100% professional and can put all this out of their mind, but that's, these players are human beings.
Mm-hmm.
Luton was at one point, 6 points clear because of your 10 or something like that? They were 4 or 5 points clear or something like that?
Yeah.
Because of your 10-point deduction? So that, you know what? I think they lost the next two, if I remember correctly, after that decision. It galvanized you all. It could have deflated you.
Right.
But it galvanized you. And you won 4 straight. And by the end of the third game, you were level with Luton on points.
Yeah.
So it's like, did Luton prepare in the same? And that's their fault, yes.
Mm-hmm.
But they're adding to an already pressurized situation, to an already stressful job, to
when we got our points back, we were 1 point ahead of them. So all we did was become 5 points ahead of them.
Okay.
Sorry.
So what the Premier League is doing, or this independent commission is doing, is adding to what is already a pressurized situation, what is already a stressful job, what is already dependent upon human performance, and mental state, basically. And it's taking this outside problem that could be handled during the month of June, if that was their full-time job for the month of June. Compile your evidence, go through the books all season, do all that shit. When you get those books on December 30th, as you're meant to, or January 1st, or whatever it is, spend that time till June combing through everything.
Right.
June 1, we start trials.
Yeah.
Why is that not a thing? Why is there no schedule of punishment?
Yeah. This is what you get for being this much over.
Right.
Because with Everton, they came out and they said, like, okay, well, for each of the 2 million they were over, or it was, yeah, something like that, we docked 2 points per, and that's where they got to the 10 points total. But then right after they did that, they went,
that's a lot.
Everything's on, no. The league just went, this is how we determined it for Everton. Everything else is on a case-to-case basis.
Right.
As if to almost say, and you hate to put on the glasses or go whataboutism, is almost to say, Everton, you were really mouthy during COVID. You were really mouthy about the fucking thought of the Super League, and you didn't like the punishments we handed out. We're going to really fuck with you.
Mouthy about the Super League was a good thing, though, for them.
Yeah.
So that should have got you some points back.
Yeah.
Also, about the Super League, by the way, as it relates to all these things, do you have a specific time we're going to talk about that?
Yes, towards the end we are going to talk about that, because I want to kind of talk about the repercussions of everything as a whole. And when we do talk about that, I want to talk about what the UEFA league rules are as well at that time.
Yes, okay, because just remind me, because as it relates to that court case that Barcelona won, I think is more of a problem for UEFA than it is for the individual leagues. But we'll talk about that later.
Very good.
So yeah, it's just a fucked up situation, man. There's I don't know why it's a 3-year period. I don't know why it's not just for the last season's books. I don't understand how because the other thing is it's an odd number of years. So if the year of the 10 is the middle is the third year, you've got to pay that price 3 times until it's off your books.
Right. Well, and technically
that doesn't make sense.
The year of the 10 was 2016, 2017.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm with you. That's like, when all those payments were done.
Right.
But the money that was owed hit you later. Yeah.
Right. But just so you have a situation where you have to pay for the same crime 3 times, essentially.
Right.
So why don't you? I don't understand why we're not just doing a season at a time and moving everything again to a tribunal in the off season. It doesn't make any sense.
These were your books this season.
Yeah.
How did you spend your money this season?
And if you're going to do, I also find it strange. These are all independent companies. They all have different fiscal years.
Right. And but the other question there, too, that you have to wonder then, though, is doesn't that then put an immediate disadvantage to a newly promoted club? Because a newly promoted 100%. Club has to spend a shit ton of money if they want to stay up. You look at prime examples would be now.
Yeah, but you're looking at that new season because they're not spending that money until they've already been promoted.
Right.
So their championship money's done. We've already looked at those books.
Right.
Now we're looking at the new books.
What I say, though, about promoted teams is you look at a team like Wolverhampton, they had already spent their money in the championship when they got up. But you look at a team like Villa, when they got back up, they had to spend money. And in it also, you need to be able to keep the asset, right? So, like, for them, Jack went down with you. Jack stayed with you. Jack kept you up, and then you got paid for Jack.
But Jack was also their best player, hands down.
But that's how it should work, right? Like, the guy who got you up, you shouldn't have to sell the minute you get up there just to then afford the books you need. Go ahead, Mel.
Checking in is the Geck, a.k.a. Stat Boy.
Hey, Stat Boy.
Who says, I believe the books for football clubs closed on July 31, so the fiscal year is August to July.
It's actually June 30, and we'll get in because that's specifically why Everton had to sell Richarlison before July 1 to Spurs, because it was the end of their fiscal. The end of fiscal was on June 30.
Very impressive.
Yeah, thank you.
Put that in your stat pipe and smoke it.
He's in the right spot. He's just off by a month. It's June 30. And I know that because we're going to, because that's also part of a question that I have that's, you know,
I just like to fuck with Geck. That's all.
Graham, did you lose your thought, or do you still have your thought that you wanted to mention? It's okay to say you lost your thought.
I think I lost my thought.
Okay.
But it was important to that. Remember that piece that I read about what counts against you, right? Right. So Jack Grealish was still an asset. He still had a contract, right? So whatever you sign a player for, right, that length of contract is the asset, essentially, right? Right. So if you sign him for $50 million, he's worth, quote-unquote, $50 million. Now, he was obviously a product of the youth academy, but he was signing professional contracts after that. So if I signed him to a £35 million deal, even though we came up, he's still a £35 million asset, and that depreciates over X amount of the length of the contract at the time, the length of the contract, right? So ultimately, he would have only had, I think he had what, Mel, 2 years left on his deal when he got sold?
I believe it was.
Something like that, 2-3 years left on his deal, do you know?
Sure.
Okay.
It was a $100 million buyout clause.
Right. But if he's on a 5-year deal, the last deal he signed, right, or whatever it was, say for, you know, £35 million over the 5 years, just call it that. Right, he plays 3 years. He has 2 years left. Right, so $35 million over 5 years would be £7 million a year depreciation. So 7, 14, 21. Right, so he's now worth $14 million. He gets sold for $100 million. That's a net gain of $86 million in assets.
Actual product of their academy. So 100%.
No, I know, but I'm talking about just the money. Okay. But once he signs a professional contract, he becomes an asset to that football club.
Got you.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I hear you 100%.
So that £14 million asset, to them, he's full profit, yes, to their actual books.
Right.
But in terms of what this PSR losses versus whatever, if he just left on a, if they just decided, say he touched a kid and they just canceled his contract.
Right.
They would incur a loss of £14 million.
Right.
Because he still had 2 years left on his deal that was worth 35 over 7 years.
Right.
Right. Or 35 over 5 years. That's what I mean. So because he still had value there, right, you have to subtract that value. So $100 million minus that 14, Villa would have gained £86 million on that deal. These are all hypothetical numbers. Please don't hold me to this.
Right.
The way that this reads, it's not a $100 million profit. It's an $86 million profit.
Right.
Pound profit.
Right.
Do you see what I'm saying?
I'm with you.
So that has to be played into account as well. I don't know if I guess it would depend if the wage structure changed if you got relegated. Yeah, it would have to depend on if the wage structure changed if you got relegated, because
That's why Leeds loaned out a bunch of their players.
Because they couldn't,
they were still on those wages.
Right.
Hence why
and they wouldn't take
Harrison
cuts.
And
yep, and they wouldn't take cuts.
Went to Bournemouth. Like, yeah, if you, yeah.
So it's just like the whole thing's just kind of weird, man. Like, so it's an odd time frame. It's an odd, you know, way that they look back. So, for instance, in my mind, that 3-year period where all that shit for Everton happened, or even Forrest or whoever, for that 3-year period, if we charge you for something, right? We should then take new books from that point.
Right. Right. Fair. Now, here's
but that means that your loss is only $35
million. So I want to bring up another topic because you talked about, you know, Grealish, which is a profitability situation. Let's talk about a loss situation, but that loss situation is mitigated by how much you lose, right?
Right.
We're going to take Gylfi Sigurdsson. Bought it $50 million, right? Mm-hmm. Everton could have eventually sold him on to someplace like the Turkish League or something like that for probably $20 million, right? Right. It would have been a loss. But then on the books, you only bought them for $30 million, not $50 million. And
it depends if you have to pay them out. It depends on the breach of contract.
But,
so if you,
but the I'm talking about just the loan fee. I mean, the signing fee, right? That signing fee also goes on the books. Salary is a completely different thing. Right? Uh-huh. So we're just talking about the actual, you know, signing fee, that agreement between clubs. And for Everton, you look at that, right? Mm-hmm. Let's say you sell him for 20 and you're now you've only lost 30, right? So you're now in that world of 19.5, you're now at 9.5. You're
very close, right? Yeah.
Cenk Tosun, again, another one. Everybody knew about the number 10, but remember the number 10 went completely wrong and then Big Sam came in, dear God, and then we bought Tosun for way too much money, $30 million, right? He was also out the door because he was on loan at Crystal Palace and they had already agreed they were happy with him, they liked him, for $10 million, right? Cenk gets hurt, comes back to Everton, sits out basically the rest of his contract, walks away on a free.
Mm-hmm.
That $10 million, if you were only 9.5 down, well, holy shit. Everton's suddenly not down at all that 19.5 off of two players, right? And obviously there's going to be ebbs and flows and shit like that happens, but kind of extenuating circumstances. Let's look at that for all clubs, right? Mm-hmm. Not just Everton. In a case like Villa or a promoted club in Forest, that marquee player, don't you want that marquee player to be on that team the minute they get promoted? That's where they should be, right? That's mm-hmm. That's why they got promoted.
Mm-hmm.
And what these rules are doing is putting you in a situation where you got to sell the guy. And great, you get money for it, but you're already at a disadvantage because your club culture came up on certain players. Mm-hmm. And you just kind of fuck yourself at that point, right?
You can.
And then you have to go out and all credit to the Hatters for what they did, but then you've got a bargain shop to bring in kind of has-beens and maybe should-have-beens or, you know, within, you know, the Premier League and maybe you
players from Nice that eat crayons.
Maybe you scrappily stay your way up, right? It seems like it kind of defeats the purpose of the other 14 to have opportunities is what I'm getting at.
I mean, what you're talking about there is really the 15 mm-hmm. above them, because let's be honest, how many yo-yo clubs are there really?
Right.
So, yeah, Palace, you know, Fulham to an extent kind of before the last few years, mm-hmm. but say Palace, who's been in the league now, what, 9-10 years running,
mm-hmm.
they're part of the furniture.
Right.
Are they going down? Probably not.
Probably not, no.
So, no. So, they're benefiting also from these rules because they have a ceiling, but they're not going to get relegated again.
Right.
Unless they break these rules, potentially. You know what I'm saying? What I would say to that, and it's a harsh thing to say, and I'm in a privileged position being an Arsenal supporter, I guess, that I just have a big club that traditionally won things and put themselves in that position to do that. You know, the other option is you don't have a football club. Mm-hmm. Ask the supporters of Bury what they'd rather have. Would they rather be mid-table League Two or would they rather not have anything to do on a Saturday?
Mm-hmm.
So these rules are important, is all I'm saying. Now, is it a sport? In the Premier League, yes. We, regardless of whether or not you're about to get relegated, we are in a privileged position as the top 20 in the pyramid that probably none of our shit's going to go out of business. But these rules
also,
are...
Also helps that you're in one of the wealthiest fucking cities in the world,
mm-hmm.
where Newcastle is a town that's gotten completely forgotten.
I know.
Like, there's differences in that, too.
I understand that.
You can't build too big of a stadium if you're in a smaller market. You can't overcharge for tickets. You just simply can't do that. And
you could. Just look at Harris Teeter.
We look.
We already talked about it. Just fucking raise the price. Fuck them. But...
And
pay for more for your Cheerios, Mel.
So let's go ahead and kind of get into some of the questions of this, because I think we're really have dove into players, what they're worth, how much you get paid for them, things of that nature. There's been a great equalizing factor in the world, and that is called Uncle Saudi Arabia League. Because I'll use a perfect example. Manchester City, after they had won their first title, needed to move on from some older players, a.k.a. Gareth Barry. They sold Gareth Barry to Everton for like $5 million. You know what? The man could still do a job. He did a great fucking job for Everton for four seasons. Fantastic job. That's how it should work. Mm-hmm. In today's day and age, Jordan Henderson should be playing for... fucking like Wolves or West Ham or somebody, but instead Liverpool got paid 35 fucking million for him,
mm-hmm.
because Uncle Saudi goes, ooh, I want the fancy new fucking chrome platinum goddamn jizz card of fucking Jordan Henderson, and I'm gonna show him off to all my other fucking Saudi friends.
Uh-huh.
Yes, but no.
Just your arm off camera was funny. You're just doing the motions.
Yeah, you're beating off? Yeah, because that's exactly what they are fucking doing. Yeah, except for they're not allowed to do it because their fucking country has rules.
Hey,
except for they do it.
We're married. We're not supposed to do it.
Yeah.
We still do it.
But the... So you now have that, right? Where those teams now aren't selling to the quote-unquote smaller clubs, right? And then, because the way the rules are written, those bigger clubs can now hold the smaller clubs at hostage for what they're going to pay for a fucking player, right?
Well,
AKA Richarlison. Everton had to sell Richarlison before July 1. They had to, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they got $60 million for him, which is a great number. That's good money, yes. But if they got to hold on to him for the whole summer, you don't think that number wouldn't have been 80 or 85?
72, or 76. Yeah. No, of course it would.
The number would have gone up. Absolutely. And then a bigger six club could just go, no, well, this is the number. You have to fucking sell them. You have to sell them. And now they're able to sell their unvalued assets for a shit ton of money.
Potentially. Yeah.
Potentially, they're fucking doing it.
In January, how many players went to Saudi in January?
They all went in the summer.
Right. So that spending was already curbed.
Yeah.
Because if that was a golden pathway, don't you think some... Mohamed Elneny at Arsenal.
Uh-huh.
Don't you a Muslim player as well. Don't you think we would have sold him for $60 million and then went and bought Ivan Toney? No, we didn't, though.
You wouldn't have gotten $60 million for him, though.
But... In Saudi, according to you, I could get whatever I want for whoever I want.
I said you got $35 million for fucking Jordan Henderson.
But that's
you're telling me Al Nenny's worth $60 million if Jordan Henderson's worth 35.
Yeah,
he'd be worth fucking 20.
He has 100,000 less miles. He has 100,000 less miles on his legs.
Yeah, but he's not. He's not fucking Jordan Henderson.
Okay.
He's not the name. Remember, it's baseball cards to them. They want a Griffey Jr. 1989 upper deck.
I understand that. He's already not there. He was there for 6 months, and now he's playing for Ajax.
Right.
Yes, I know.
But that's what they want.
Right, correct. And they can incur whatever losses they want to incur, because they're not actually losses, because they're paying in fucking gold bars. I get it. But that's not going to be... That league is now packed with players on overpaid wages with full squads. And players are leaving Saudi. I don't think that Golden Gateway is going to be there for very long. Their attendances are less than 1,000 people on average per fucking game.
those owners of those clubs don't care.
I know they don't care, but the player still has to agree to go. And I think they saw what happened. Ronaldo couldn't change it. All these other players couldn't change it. And a lot of players are saying no now. They don't want to go. They want to stay in Europe.
They spend...
That's what I'm saying.
Millions of dollars to have the lowest number license plate, Sam.
I know.
They do not understand what money fucking is. I understand
that, but there are so many layers of acceptance that have to happen before somebody gets to go there. And if the club doesn't say yes, I'm sorry, if the club says yes, then the player has to say yes. And if the first there has to be interest, then the club has to say yes, then the player has to say yes. Then they actually have to get approved for their visa and all the other shit that they have to do, which I'm sure that's the easiest part of the entire thing. But I, based on January, one transfer window, everybody was worried about Saudi. Everton get docked 10 points. Everybody's worried about financial fair play. Why weren't they offloading players in January?
And they're going to fucking sell a shit ton this summer.
I think they will.
I guarantee you they will.
I don't think they will.
And I think those players, you know what they'll do? They'll work the fucking system. They'll go there, they'll get signed, and then they'll get fucking loaned out.
What I think is going to happen is teams, much like what's going on with City, who are treating Club Brugge or whoever they own in Belgium or City, which I can't remember the Australian team, but they own a team in Australia also, New York City FC here in the States. Mm-hmm. They're treating these teams as farm teams. So Jeremy Doku.
Right.
20 million, his actual market value is probably 40.
Right.
That's what I think you're going to start seeing. I think the Piff Posse might do that at Newcastle, have their cousin buy somebody that they want for an excessive amount of money and then loan them to Newcastle because they're all involved, like City is doing with their network of clubs, like Red Bull did a few times between Salzburg and Leipzig.
Right, of course.
I think you're going to see more of that. Mm-hmm. But I think based on the failure of the Saudi league so far, I think a lot of players are going to stay in Europe. We already saw the ASEAN fall out of China when they did it.
Okay, I've got a counter to that, but Mel, you had something?
Taylor Thompson. You can buy players, but you can't buy dignity. Ask Liverpool.
Come on, you had to assume.
Thanks for providing some levity, sir. Fucking penis. I love you.
Well, here's a comparison, right? Golf. Mm-hmm. The Live group, right? They weren't successful. They weren't getting TV ratings. It didn't mean anything at all. It was fuck all. What ultimately happened? They bought the fucking PGA. Mm-hmm. They fucking bought it, right?
But there was but that's the thing, is there was no regulation stating that they couldn't. Actually, what happened was, I think, a perfect time to bring in the Super League chat.
That's exactly where I was about to go.
Because this is exactly what just happened. Essentially, they sued them saying that they had a monopoly and in an antitrust case, and they won against the PGA. Mm-hmm. Basically, that they could organize their own competition, which they were granted. Mm-hmm. Nobody cared. Nobody was going, really.
Right.
But the PGA was losing their best talent. So then they said, well, why don't we merge? And then there's no one to sue us. So let's create our own trust again. And they did that, basically. They're merging with the PGA. Buying them out. But
right.
They're merging with the PGA.
So here's where we're going to go with this. I'm not even going to bother getting into Chelsea other than they have spent over $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. They have been charged with problems that stem back to before the club was bought by Todd Boehly. And in fact, when he bought the club, he had reportedly set aside $200 million for legal fees because he was expecting it to come, where Shaker, a Russian oligarch, was paying people off the books. And that's coming up for them. Now, the other question that ultimately lies with them is they deferred everything. Obviously, the rules have been changed, but you wonder if the rules are going to get changed again, which is a question I will ask in a moment. But let's go ahead and dive into what the Super League is. If we look at punishments and we look at both Chelsea and City, who are just like walking up the bridge to the guillotine, right? To get into some real fuck trouble.
Chelsea won't be for a few years, but yes.
It's coming, right?
It probably will come in the sixth or seventh year of these 8-year payments.
Right. Unless they decide to change the rules, which also another question, not out of the fucking possibility.
Yeah, but they need all 20 Premier League clubs to agree to it. And at this point, I don't think they all will because of the debacle this has been.
I think the other 14 from now on are just going to go, nope. Like, yeah. Completely. Now, here's where I said what could happen with a Super League is that if the book gets thrown at City or Chelsea, these are two clubs that ultimately have more money than God, right? These are super, mm-hmm. super wealthy clubs. And the notion of a Super League has been tossed out before. You already know Madrid and Barcelona want out of La Liga. They, even though they keep winning it, they still want out. And you know Juventus...
They only want out because of money.
Right. And you know Juventus wants out of Italy. Uh-huh. And you know PSG wants out of France. Now, the one bastion...
The PSG never signed on to the original Super League.
But the one bastion of hope is Germany, where Bayern just went, fuck you.
Well, Germany...
Fuck you.
The thing about Germany is all of their clubs are 49% owned
by fans.
By fans. So they have a blocking vote on the board.
Right.
Like, they can't just do whatever they want. They have to involve the fan groups. So
and Bayern came out immediately and just like, nope.
Right.
No, not interested at all. Now, what you start to wonder, though, is if the chips start to fall a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you have Juventus, PSG, City, Chelsea, Barca, and Madrid are all in. And, here's Uncle Saudi maybe getting what they really want, right? Oh, we've got a shit ton of money. We can buy whatever the fuck we want.
Uh-huh.
Suddenly that becomes backed, right? Now, you guys, I'll give you credit for this. You seem to be the big six club that does it right, right? That typically does it right. But if everybody else goes, you'll probably follow.
No, because I don't think they're going to go.
Liverpool and United will just go wherever the fucking money is.
Do you want to know what I think is going to happen?
Go.
So they basically sued UEFA, the Juventus, Barca, Real Madrid, essentially sued UEFA, saying that they wanted to be able to organize. They did the Live Golf thing.
Mm-hmm.
We should be allowed to organize our own competitions. So what I think is going to happen, because none of them, their fan bases, everyone's fan bases, and these clubs are still local clubs despite being so big.
Mm-hmm.
They have a global reach, which made them bigger. But they are local clubs. I mean, they sell out 100,000 fucking seats every week, Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
Real Madrid sells out 95,000 seats every week. Arsenal sells out 62,000 seats every week. What they're going to do is they're going to say they're going to devalue the Champions League is what they're going to do.
Right.
And then they're going to be able to stay in their domestic leagues but organize their own competition.
Okay.
And they're going to replace the Champions League with the original backer was JP Morgan Stanley, but potentially Saudi. They're going
Saudi wants in.
They're going to replace that midweek competition with the Super League, is what's going to happen. That's what I ultimately think is going to happen. The backlash from the local community, if they don't have those backers, all of these rules being put in place are going to fuck them tremendously.
Mm.
And how can you be in a Super League if you're playing in League Two?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? You can't. You have to stay in that Premier League. You want to, the tradition of the English people. There's no fucking way they're letting them six leave.
Mm-hmm.
It ain't happening. So what I think they're trying to do is completely undermine the Champions League and UEFA's competition, because they essentially are creating the same thing just in a closed format where it's only them.
And
getting paid a shitload more than they would in the Champions League for it. That's why the Champions League was reformatted.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, even if Arsenal don't finish in the top four, right? Our UEFA coefficient average over the last 10 years comes into account. And I might still get a place even if I don't finish in the top four, in England. Right? So I could finish in seventh and still be in the Champions League because of my UEFA coefficient from 8 years ago.
Which benefits the big six clubs and not.
Yeah, because
the other
UEFA
14.
Doesn't want to lose them.
Right.
They need those cash cows.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That absolutely is blatantly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want the Super League to happen, so they reformatted the Champions League to make it very difficult for Real Madrid, Barcelona, any of the big clubs to miss out. But what they did was expand the competition to allow some of the smaller clubs in as mm-hmm. well. So, yeah, fourth place in England still can go. If Arsenal have a Chelsea, they've won it twice. They're in 11th. Full potential for them to be in the Champions League because of their coefficient average over the last 10 years or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? But we still let Villa in. They haven't won it since the 70s. We still let Villa in because they finished in fourth. So because we expanded the tournament and there's more teams. So they've opened the door. Villa's in the vestibule. The rest of us are in the church. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we'll stay in the church. We cited sanctuary. We're here now. But teams like Villa that pop in and out, Tottenham that pop in and out, these clubs that pop in and out, yeah. Right. Here's the Saudis. Here's the steeple. Here's Seferin. Look at the people. That's do you understand what I'm trying to say?
So I understand what you're trying to say. I'm going to tell you right now.
They shut
Graham,
the door. This is UEFA doing this though.
It's fucking bullshit.
It's UEFA doing it, not the clubs, because UEFA doesn't want to lose them. So they shut the door behind the big 17 or whoever, right? And they left the vestibule open for everybody else. And so you can come in and out. But that's exactly, that's what it is. That's what happened. And your performance in that competition affects your UEFA coefficient. So even if I have a second shit year, as long as I progress to the third round, I'm probably good for next year too. I didn't write the rules. Arsenal didn't write the rules. This is UEFA doing that. But what those other clubs did was they sued UEFA to say, we should be allowed to form our own competition. So they'll either do in every summer or every other summer Club World Cup. That's a big possibility mm-hmm. to replace FIFA's World Cup. Or they are going to go after the Champions League and shut up shop further and not have a vestibule for a lot more money.
So, yeah, for me, it sounds like the bigger clubs get to have their cake and eat it too.
Then tell the European court that said it was okay to do it.
Now,
I mean, that, like I said, they're not. They're going to find a solution to not leave their domestic leagues.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they'll be able to survive on their own.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be an additional competition.
Right.
Because the local people just go, fuck you. I'm not doing six away weeks in a row to Holland, Italy, who, I don't know, say Red Star get in or whatever. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they're going to try to replace the Champions League or they're going to try to replace the Club World Cup. Those are the two things that I think are going to happen. Right. One of those two things will happen. But a European court allowed it to go down.
Right.
The same way the American court allowed the antitrust thing to go down. It's fucking bullshit.
I want to turn this back towards the league proper, right? Towards the English Premier League, because there's multiple thoughts. First thing, do we think the FA is going to change the rules over the next year and suddenly Forest and Everton are just going to kind of be, oh, well, tough shit for you. That's what the rules were that year. They're different now. People can get away with it. Do we think that's going to happen?
So, yes. And here's the reason why. As we were talking about the Super League, and this is the main reason I think that the Super League, which they also can't call it, by the way, because the Danish League won that court case.
Cool.
They're gotcha. Already called the Super League.
Right.
So they filed a trademark infringement.
Good on them.
Yeah.
Well done.
So it's going to have to be called something else. It's going to have to be called fucking Barcelona's Cock or something.
Super Awesome League.
Yeah. Super Awesome Happy Fun Time.
Show title.
Mella was Super Awesome Happy Fun Time.
She didn't like that show title. Please continue.
So UEFA does have separate profitability and sustainability rules, commonly known as financial fair play. Mm-hmm. It was an implementation of rules going harsher and harsher each year, getting more stringent, right? And this is the main reason I think these clubs are going to target the Champions League specifically, okay? Mm-hmm. And replace it with their own Super League that they form themselves outside of UEFA. UEFA are currently implementing new rules and have dropped the financial fair play moniker, which they previously used. The head of European football, and this comes from the same Sky Sports article, by the way.
Oh, which, by the way, everybody, something I learned, don't call it FFP for England.
It's PSR.
It's PSR.
Right.
It's profitability and sustainability regulations.
And for differences, we're going to still refer to UEFA's rules as FFP so we know what the fuck we're talking about.
Exactly.
The heads of European football have said...
Graham, I can tell you this much. It's too many fucking acronyms.
I know.
That's exactly what it is.
It's the Alphabet Brigade.
Which, by the way, I was going to do the acronyms for the show title, so I will also now include FFP, PF whatever, and then SAHFT.
Super Awesome Happy Fun Time League. Throw L on the end of that, because we got to add league, right?
Yeah, leagues.
All right. So, where was I? The heads of European football have said their new rules are not designed to create a level playing field.
Wow.
Specifically said that, but rather to force clubs to live within their means. So don't go out of business. We just don't want you to go out of business. If you have a financial gain, you're allowed to spend it. Right? That's what they're saying.
In that instance, a club like Newcastle can spend as much money as they want because they got the PIF.
So here's the thing. Mm-hmm. In the same style as the Premier League, clubs are permitted to make 3 years losses of 60 million, 51.8 million pounds, 60 million euros, excuse me, with 55 million euros of that through secure funding from owners. So they're allowed to lose the same 5 million, but they're allowed to inject more than the owners are elsewhere. So, yes, according to UEFA, yes, the owner can add
more
funds.
More money.
But for anyone feeling the pinch from those lower numbers, there's also the added cushion of an additional 30 million loss allowed for clubs who UEFA deems in good financial standing for a total of 90 million over the previous 3 years. Oh, shit. I'm sorry. That's a 3-year loss of 60 million total.
Okay.
Not 35 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's a total of 60 million. So 20 million a year.
So even tighter.
But they're allowed to receive 55 million over that 3-year period from their owner.
Okay. Very good.
So this is so fucking ridiculous. So, yes, the Premier League is moving towards, this was the last bit of the article, the Premier League is moving towards changing the rules and moving closer to UEFA reforms, potentially as soon as this summer.
Got it. Now,
will Everton get a chance to vote on it? Who knows? Because their appeal won't be heard until after the season's over, and they may be in the championship.
Yeah, who fucking knows?
It's fucking ridiculous.
It
sucks.
So, the final question I'm going to ask, and let's, you know what, Mr. Graham? Let's put a bow on it.
Yes. Fucking wrap this up. Oh.
Because honestly, we can talk for another fucking 3 hours and still get nowhere.
Because it's just fucking absurd is what it is.
Right.
They skirted an independent regulator by self-regulating, yet they didn't lay out a form of punishment. Now everything's left open to interpretation. Who actually appoints the independent regulator? Still haven't really heard that other than the Premier League.
Right.
The whole thing's ridiculous. The whole thing's ridiculous.
So,
You know what? Just let them do whatever they want. Let them run themselves into the fucking ground. Fuck them.
One would think.
If one wants to take it upon themselves to, you know, we've been here for 150 years. We'd like to be here for 150 more. Fucking let them do it.
Yeah.
Let them run themselves the right way.
Right.
And if you want to run yourself into the ground, fuck you. Go ahead.
Yeah.
That's what I think.
Yeah.
Free market, bitch. Fuck you, commies.
Now, do we think more teams will be charged next year?
Yeah. 100%.
And how do
will we understand it? Fuck no.
Do we think it'll be handled better than
God, I hope so.
Do we think they'll just go, we're going to wait till June, and that's when we charge and run things?
We will have to see what these rule changes are going to be this summer, what the clubs actually sit and vote on during the off-season meetings, right? When they get the 20 teams together and they're, well, maybe 24 teams, because we won't know who's in the league. Mm-hmm. What's your vote? Well, once those decisions are handed down, we'll count this set of votes. But before that, we got to count this set of votes because that's who's in the league right now. We're not really sure.
For Everton, they're out of the drop right now. Just win games. Just win games. It doesn't matter what you get docked. If you win, like if you get docked another four, you're still safe. Just win games.
So the question is going to be is what the teams vote on to bring in, or does the government go, okay, look at yourselves over the last 18 months. You fucked it. We're stepping in. There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah.
If you want to do business in this country, then we're stepping in, and that's the British government can do that. The American government can't, but the British government can, right? Mm. They can step in and go, listen, this is, you fucked it, man. So we're going to take it over, and we're going to appoint an independent commission to run these, and this is how it's going to work, and these are the dates, and this is everything else. But you do have to still come in, kiss the king's ring, do this, that, the other, genuflect at the end of the, you know. I mean, there's still...
By the way, the prince is not going to let Villa get in any trouble. You know fucking shit's going to happen there.
Well, he may be... We're not sure where he is.
Yeah.
Or his wife.
Yeah.
You know what's going on with this?
Yes, she has cancer.
No, massive conspiracy theories that apparently released a video of them walking in the park. Ain't look like her.
Graham, stop talking. It's in Kitty the Chicken's bed.
Graham, stop talking. It's in Kitty the Chicken's bed.
Allow me to be petty for just one moment to finish this off.
Find Kate. Hashtag find Kate.
Hey, Lester. How is it in your ivory tower? Oh, wait, no, you're in the mud like fucking us. Fuck you.
Sure money.
I just don't know anymore.
By the way, we're able, like, because we're not doing it through the event, apparently everyone can see each other's chat, and they're just roasting one another.
Oh, fantastic.
And
I love it.
Sure, Billy is picking on Christian, and Taylor's picking on Everton, and it's hysterical.
I love it. Brilliant.
Well, you know what? Closing words. Since nothing's really happened this week.
Oh, I mean, come on. There were some cunts last night in Dallas.
Oh, yeah, the big fight.
And apparently...
The fucking Mexican supporters.
Sure.
Yeah, the big fight in the stands. Yeah.
Sure, Billy is...
Well, just them talking constantly, too.
Oh, really?
Their chance. Not so good. Yeah. Go ahead.
Sure, Billy is incredibly high, and Taylor is incredibly drunk, and...
just how we like them.
Yeah, that's sure on Christian's
status. Both of them, that is.
One of us.
Yeah.
That's exactly how we want this fucking train to go. Actually, you know what, Mel? Allow me to steal your term. That's exactly how we want this fucking pirate ship to be fucking going.
I go rogue.
All right. Mr. Graham, your segment. Go for it.
So if we remember back to pre-week, I'm down 15-47.
Mm-hmm.
So that sucks. I will give you my bet at the end as usual, sir. What's going on with you?
All right. Like I said, the bees let me down with that early red card, and I'm down $118.
Big Sam's lock of the week.
26.666667% of the time. It works 100% of the time. By the way, it is 27.9. If we hit that number, you got to fucking make the shirt again. And... What I'm going to do is I am actually going to take two $50 bets, Mr. Graham. So instead of doing my 100, splitting it into two 50s.
Okay.
Because the double chance did not pay off very well. So I wanted to do them as individual bets. The odds are stupid. I'm probably going to lose it. Honestly, I want to lose it because they're competing with us at the bottom of the table. But I'm going to take Luton to beat Spurs. A $50 bet gets me plus 500, and Luton to draw Spurs, which makes me $300. So if they draw, I make 250. If they win, I make 450.
Nice.
And like I said, the double chance was only $320, so fuck it. I'd rather just put down two $50 bets instead.
Taylor says you mean four fitties?
Yeah, four fitties. No fitty. So that's what I'm going to do, Mr. Graham. Split it up a little bit. The odds were just so stupid. And knowing Spurs' propensity to just fuck it off, why not?
Yeah,
why not? You. Why not? And if I lose, I lose 100, and I'm still way ahead of both of you.
Yeah, fair. Until I'm in here,
then it's not I'll be ahead happen. Of you. It's not going to happen. Might, it's not going
to
happen.
It might. Anyway, this is what Pat had to say.
And now it's time for our degenerate gambling friend Pat's Pick of the Week.
Little lady sent it as well, 902.
Yeah.
Wow.
I texted him and said, hey, dude. He's going out of town to Orlando on a family vacation.
Wow.
So it was like, oh, shit, forgot. I've been packing.
Nice.
Mate. Keeping you awake.
Sorry. No, the abacus got to me today. What he said was, well, it's been a couple of weeks, but I did hit my single bet, so I'm currently climbing into second worst better spot on the show at -1200. I'm not sure.
You're -15.
It's a weird way to word that. Second worst better.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, as a better.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was saying better, like this is better.
I'm
very confused.
You're the worst. He's the second worst. I'm the third worst. Kitty's the best.
But we're all better.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
But none of you are better than the other.
A bettor. As it should be.
A bettor.
Just, you throw you in there like that's the right. French.
It's okay. Houston's a better man.
Thank you.
Is he?
I can't find a better man.
I hope you guys didn't lose too much this past weekend on the craziness of college basketball. Actually, that San Diego State game last night.
Mm-hmm.
I refunded myself everything I had lost from the start of the tournament.
That a boy.
It was fucking in one swoop. I almost quit, and then I
better balls
gambled today. Lose too much this past weekend on the craziness of college basketball. I found a great strategy of winning margin bets that paid off, so I'm going to use that into hopefully a winning bet this weekend. I have put some action on the match of the weekend, Arsenal at Manchester City. I'm going to put $100 on the exact score of 2-2 for a payoff of $1,000. Hopefully, I can continue my good luck into next weekend and not throw it all away. You guys have a great week. Baseball's back. Let's go, O's.
Very good. Yes, Producer Mel?
None of the bettors are better than any of the bettors betting best bets.
Who wrote that one?
Fuck, I don't, fuck you.
Best cold reader of the business.
Hold on. Sure, Billy. Are you really that high if you just able to type out?
Right.
No, he did it pretty quickly. One would have, because he would have had to retype that multiple times if he was really high.
Well, so. He probably did it wrong, actually. Sent it wrong, and Mel just was also very high and read it properly because they're on the same planet right now.
Or sure, Billy, be higher.
Do better.
That's a dare.
Yeah, no shit. That's a dare. Nice. Noice. Noice.
Oh, very good. What are you going to bet, Mr. Graham?
All right, so like I said, I'm down 15-47, so I'm going to do something to claw a lot of that back right now. Tottenham to nine-way parlay. One, two, three, four. No, five. Tottenham to beat Luton, Chelsea to beat Burnley, Forest to beat Palace, Fulham to win away at Sheffield, and Villa to beat Wolves. All of which, individually, you would all take and put your houses on.
Mm-hmm.
Plus 914.
Not good gambling.
It's going to be great, and I already put $10 on it in real money as well.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be betting my fake 100 here on the
show.
Get
it the fuck together, Sam.
For that to about three quarters, my bet gone.
Very good.
My deficit gone, rather.
Still be behind me.
It'll be fine.
You know who we're all behind? The chicken.
You like cold reading, Mel?
Well, Kitty missed on another draw as Fulham whop Spurs, and she sits at 15-13. So this week, I gave Kitty Aston Villa hosting Wolverhampton. Now, Kitty showed me a photo of our good friends Lindsay and Nicole sitting with Kate, the Princess of Wales. Now, we don't know if the photo had seen any alterations, but we do know that Lindsay and Cole are villainistas, and Kate's hubby is about a villa as they come, so Kitty is picking Villa to beat the wolves. And remember, guys, two things. One, gamble legally and responsibly. And two, never doubt the best motherfucking cold reader in the business!
Blocked it again. Did put it right back in the danger zone, though.
Also, never doubt my ability to keep up on things and write it. He can't save anything. Actually, you're right.
It hit me in the chest. It didn't go past me. My position, I'm not allowed to use my hands, Gunt.
We were up 7-1, and I remember you giving up fucking 9.
5, and then you jump back in.
Yeah. Sure, Billy. That was an amazing cold read, though.
Thanks.
Also, he said thanks.
Don't doubt.
Are you high?
Don't doubt my ability to keep
yes, for I did. My skills.
Yeah, I'm accepting your praise as a man. Good Lord, this thing has gone off the rails.
On behalf of my wife, I'll accept this award.
It's history month, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's my fucking inspiration that's made you successful.
I'm Bruce Day, bitch. Let's bring it back to the original. You know, hey, real quick, you know what's funny? I had a problem with my heater over the weekend. Yep. I called Robbio, and I was like, hey, bro, you still remember how to do some of the HVAC shit you used to do back in the day? He was like, yeah. I said, this is my problem. He goes, I think it's this. I'll be over around noon. So I'm coming back from Dumfries. Elizabeth just ran the first leg of the Marine Corps marathon series in Herndon or wherever he was, Dumfries or whatever it was. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, congratulations. Can she hear me? I'm on Bluetooth. He was like, yeah. I was like, hey, did you finish? And she was like, yeah. I got done. I said, what was your time? She said, 2:58. I said, ooh, got to get you on a training field. She was like, I'd like to see you do it. I said, you ain't going to never see that. I said, because you'll pick me up the next day at the hospital.
All right, boys and girls. Anyways, let's get this fucking thing done. Mr. Graham, any parting words. I know there is a big old D-back this week.
Yeah, so I want you to talk about, because I only saw a 30-second snippet on TikTok about it, but there was a large fight at the U.S.-Mexico game in Dallas, is that right?
Yes, so there were multiple fights in the stands, yes. There was that. Really, what it comes down to is, yet again, every single time Mexico is losing, the Mexican supporters decide it is time, every single time there's a goal kick from the opposing goalkeeper, they go, and then they scream, puta, which is
bitch.
Typically bitch. It is also slang for the F-bomb.
Okay. Yeah, puta madre, motherfucker, yeah. All right.
So, and CONCACAF has come out and said, not cool. If you guys do this, there will be a warning. If you do it again, the ref will stop the match and pull all the players to the center circle. You do it again and the ref deems it, they will suspend the match.
Right.
That's it. It's over. This happened. Remember when Weston McKinney got the red card and a couple of players for Mexico got the red card? This was the last time that it was the Nations League title, which, by the way, Mexico has yet to win, and we've won 3 of them. they started with the chance again, and it was warned, stopped, brought to the center circle. Then they started to do it again. And they started doing it to the point where it was just every free kick.
Right.
They would yell it, the whole crowd.
Yeah.
And they're just being told, stop it. Stop it over and over and over again. They eventually finally got the game done. But we're reaching a point where you gotta feel like something bigger needs to be done. Right. And I've heard people be like, oh, take the World Cup away from. No, you're not gonna fucking do that, because that's a financial.
It's also the 40-year anniversary of them hosting it the first time.
Right. So it's a financial windfall for the country. You do not want to hold that against that country. But you do need to set some standards for their fans. Now, what you wonder, though, is all these instances that it has happened on American soil. Obviously, there was a large population of Mexican Americans that live in the United States. How many Mexican nationals are coming over the border to watch a match, right? You don't know how many are Mexican Americans, how many are natural citizens. You just don't know these things. But at some point, like, the Mexican players are even doing videos just going, stop, stop doing it, man. It's not funny. Stop it. Just stop. How do you stop this from happening? Is it, do you have Mexico play USA at the Azteca in qualifying or whatever to an empty fucking stadium?
Yeah.
Like, but because
I'd have them play here with an empty stadium, because most of the time we don't play them in Dallas. Of the time we play them in Columbus, Ohio, and or I Cincinnati. Doubt anybody's getting across the border to go all the fuck the way up there for the game. That's probably sheer logistics. That's because this isn't Europe. It's not easy to move around.
But is it Mexican or Mexican Americans that are doing
what I'm
the bullshit,
saying is what
right?
I'm saying is we normally play them in Columbus or New England or Seattle, and more than likely they are Mexican Americans that are there because the sheer logistics of getting from fucking Mexico all the way up to Columbus, Ohio with what I'm sure is not a well-traveled flight path, and none of them are Neil Warnock and could just get one opened up okay, from Cornwall to fucking Aberdeen, which he already left that job, by the way. But so I would say the majority of those, which it still happens at those stadiums, are Mexican American people. Now, what needs to happen, which won't in American soccer, is the club should be responsible for selling the tickets. But we don't do that here. We do Ticketmaster. We do Live Nation. We do all of these SeatGeek. You can buy whatever you want. We don't have supporter sections.
Ticketmaster owned by the Saudis, by the way.
So is Live Nation. We don't have a specific supporter section. Right, you don't have to go through. The club can keep track of its own members, but we don't do that. U.S. Soccer Federation doesn't keep track of its own. It does, but it says you get early access and that's it. Everything around you can be sold to whoever, right? If it's not in those two supporter sections that they got, right? So what they need to do is, this is a home game for the United States. Yeah, there's 10 areas here for away fans, and the other 35 away areas are for United States fans, and you have to buy them through U.S. Soccer Federation. And that's how it goes for these games. Yeah, obviously, you can't do that with the World Cup. It's a little bit different. But treat it like a league game in England. Put the away fans in one specific section. And then
you run the risk of empty stadiums, and U.S. Soccer Federation doesn't want that.
That's a shame. Then deal with it. Or deal with them doing this, because they're not stopping.
No, they're not. That's kind of the bigger thing.
And you can't discriminate. You can't go, you look kind of Mexican, so I'm not selling you a ticket.
Exactly what I was getting at.
Because they're going to sound like that guy in the liquor store earlier.
Well, also, what if, and there is plenty of it, there are Mexican Americans who support the United States as a club, not Mexico.
Right.
Like, so, like, how do you can't base it. Kids, then that's a whole nother rabbit hole you cannot go down.
Right. And so you got to nail your ticket sales to one particular flag, and that's going to be buying through your member federation. So U.S. Soccer is going to have to sell memberships like clubs do.
Right.
And they're going to have to say, okay, good, you're getting on our website to buy a ticket, but you're a L-Tree supporter, registered L-Tree supporter. So you're only allowed to buy from us in these six sections of the stadium. Usually, especially those, they tend to do football stadiums. So you get 1-2-3, 1-2-3 in the lower and upper tier.
Right.
So you would have six sections that you're allowed to buy in as a L-Tree support, registered L-Tree supporter, and everybody else. Then you have to implement, again, what they do in Europe. Tickets will have to have names on them. If the name doesn't match your ID, you don't necessarily get in. If you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but that, again, that's money, and America don't like to lose money.
No.
Yeah.
Soccer already loses money here.
Yeah. It just
ain't gonna happen. So fucking deal with it, because it ain't going to stop.
Yeah, it's not going to stop. It's baffling angry, though. And it's just baffling
honestly,
angry.
Honestly, puta and stuff, that actually not even that bad. We say bitch and fuck in the stands all the time.
But puta has multiple meanings, and it's not just bitch. It's also the F-bomb.
Yeah, so what? We say fuck all the time as well.
No.
Because what
the rhymes the with other, maggot word.
The other.
Oh, yeah. That's what they're
so
saying.
So what I remember them saying was culero, which is like butt surfer.
Mm-hmm.
Like butt pirate. Yeah. Person of the butt.
Yeah.
Like a waiter is a mesero, table ero.
Right.
That's so culero was the word that I remember them saying. But
and then there was other words. And I don't want to get into those words. But this very simple fact is they're using a word that can be taken as a homophobic slur is what they're doing. And that's what they are doing every fucking time they don't win.
Right.
And but how do you stop it? How do you stop it?
I just told you how to stop it. They don't want to spend the money. It's going to cost millions and millions of dollars and they won't do it.
Don't let Mexico have home games with fans in it. Just don't let them. Like, take money out of their pocket. Take money out of the Mexican Federation to the point where the Mexican Federation polices their fucking selves.
But again, you have people that aren't citizens of their country that support their team that live here. So how do you stop them?
It's a big conundrum.
There's some suggestions in the chat. Let's see. Shorebilly says World Cup could just divide the stadiums down the middle with a neutral middle.
It mostly is anyway. It's all fucking corporate.
Or establish a ridiculous punishment, fines, jail time. And Christian suggests building the wall. I'm sorry. No. Bring back the 20-foot fence.
The fence doesn't... I mean, yeah, they throw beers and bullshit, but like that's not going to stop it.
Get fucked. That's funny, though, but get fucked.
All right, everybody. That's it. We have gone way too fucking long. I don't even know what the real time is because we had the fucking cameras go out and all that shit.
1 hour and 47 minutes.
Okay, we're done. We're done.
I'm tired.
Next up is the EFL show. We're going to talk about the National
we'll
League.
Just stay right here on this channel for that.
All
right,
well, I've got to get up and go grab some shit.
I need a break. So. Yeah, I got to piss.
We'll put the little commercial up.
And then after that, it'll be injury time where we'll actually preview English Premier League football and not talk about the bullshit. Mr. Graham, if somebody wanted to find injury time, how do they go about doing it?
Onlyfans.com/ Oh, sorry. No, it's that's something I'll pimp later. It's patreon.com/ Do Football Show. Sign up to that $1, $5 tier. You get all the extras Sam's talking about. It's very simple. And you get to see our smiling faces a bit more.
Sam's OnlyFans channel is, I want 4 sausages. Till next week, everybody.
Maybe they were talking about me when they chanted that.
Born in the land of Bowie, Maryland. Bred to be a fan of fucking Everton. Punch you in the eye and drink your rye. Sam Houston? Arsenal fans have another Sam. AKA the fucking Gooner Graham. Stuff of a lord. Looks great in shorts. Sam Graham.
Sam Graham.
From the United. Hit the fucking new button.